Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Turn on the lights in here, baby.
Where the hell did that come from?
Sorry. Extra bright, I want y'all to see this.
Okay. Hello, listeners. I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On today's show, we'll be talking with Aaron Weaver from Wolves in the Throne Room, listening to an archive interview with Stacey Wakefield from Please Take Me Off the Guest List, doing the daily calendar rundown with Astaire, and speaking with the founders of the Salty Streets Flea Market. Wolves in the Throne Room is an ambient black metal band from Washington State. They recently released their fourth studio album, Celestial Lineage, on Southern Lord Records. Gavin Hoffman, our resident slug metal expert, recently spoke with Aaron Weaver, the drummer from this influential band.
And then you said you've been doing the band for 8 years. How did you actually start the band? What was the initial thought, I guess, for starting the band?
We've always been involved in underground music and metal specifically, albeit maybe from a kind of outsider perspective. We're really inspired by the energy and the themes of Norwegian black metal when we first started here, when we first heard that music. You know, we heard it, you know, when it was first coming out in the 90s. Mm-hmm. We really started to be serious about the idea of playing black metal music about 8 or 9 years ago. And it's because I think that, you know, we've never been interested in just replicating Scandinavian black metal. It was our idea to take aspects of Norwegian black metal and then transform it and apply it to our own sort of specific location and have it meet our specific agenda.
So kind of more, you know, in the sense that I know a lot of the Norwegian bands drew a lot from their surroundings and their environment. You kind of, you know, basically took the same premise but applied it to your surroundings. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, okay. Nathan and I are both really interested in the landscape of the Northwest and the very specific sort of spiritual or occult aspects of the landscape of the Northwest. And that's the thing that resonates with me most about Scandinavian black metal is that it's music that very clearly rises up out of the landscape.
Right.
You know, it might, you know, on its surface, it might be, you know, have this, you know, satanic aspect and be about, you know, corpse paint and this sort of thing. But really, the thing that strikes me is that it's music that's very closely connected to a specific place. And so we took that idea and applied it to our specific place.
And then you're playing in Salt Lake in October.
Yeah, that'll be, I think, the second to last, or maybe third to last show of this upcoming tour.
And it's slated to be in a sort of a different sort of a venue, and just, you know, it's instructing people to check the website, things like that, to find out exactly where the venue is. Where, you know, can you share at all where you're going to be playing here?
I don't know. I could email you with that information later on.
That would be cool.
Yeah, Nathan is the... We have a bit of a division of labor in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And Nathan booked the majority of this tour by himself, which is different than the way we've done things in the past. Usually we, you know, use a more traditional booking agent and playing in more conventional clubs. But we've decided that we don't want to do that anymore. So we've gone back to the DIY model of booking everything ourselves through the DIY network and trying to play spaces that are, you know, not commercial clubs. Rather, they're spaces that are warehouses or non-traditional venues, playing outside, this sort of thing.
I think that's an awesome idea, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wouldn't go see a band that I liked in a sports bar.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely been situations like that in the past. Maybe not so much in bigger cities, but in a smaller town, play our music in a place where there's a big screen TV that's playing the football game and in some other, you know. And of course, we, you know, make them turn that kind of stuff off, but, you know, it's always a struggle. That's just not the kind of space that is conducive to the atmosphere that we try to
I could definitely see that not working.
Yeah, it doesn't work for the audience, and it doesn't work for us. So for this tour, we're doing things really differently, and I'm really excited about the way that it's gonna go.
So now how does that work? You guys, it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, you guys do have the farm that you guys, live on and run up there. How's that going to work, leaving the just your normal day-to-day responsibilities for, what is it going to be, 6 weeks, 2 months, something along those lines?
Yeah, well, for the past couple of years, I've had to kind of put farming and homesteading projects on the back burner because we've made the decision to focus strongly on the band. And so my wife runs things while I'm out of town. And, she has a lot of good help. She's got a farming partner that helps her run the business side of things as
okay.
far as, selling stuff at market. But, in a lot of, I'm really looking forward to being home a lot more in the future.
Right.
We see this basically as our last record in a lot of ways.
Okay.
And this, I plan on this being my last big round of touring. Because I'm definitely ready to recommit to a life at home, preparing for the oncoming apocalypse.
Now, does that mean, you're going to, discontinue playing music totally, or is that always going to be something that's kind of part of what you do?
Oh, yeah, we'll always do music, and we'll continue to play shows. And we definitely have plans to release another record after this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of already in the works. We've already got the inspiration to do it. And maybe next winter we might start working on it. But as far as being, a full-time band, which is basically what we've been for the past 3 years,
mm-hmm.
ever since Two Hunters came out, I'm done with that, and Nathan is too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, we've never wanted to be this careerist sort of band.
Sure.
And it's funny, because I think a lot of bands would like to be in the position we're in, to be able to not have a day job and tour Europe whenever they want, have a decent budget to put out records and this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I've always said I could take it or leave it.
Right.
This is happy at home canning beans or doing something like that.
Right. I think that kind of speaks to the ethic of the band and the overall, I guess, feel of the band, to have it be kind of that way. And that's, as a personal side note, I'm in, bands here myself. I have been for years, and that's always been kind of my least favorite part about being in bands is touring and being away from home, things like that. I mean, it's nice to be able to have somebody front money to help put out a record or something along those lines, but touring and being away, I've never been a huge fan of.
Yeah, I guess that's the hard part is I like it. I like touring, and
right.
I like the opportunity to meet people who have a similar worldview, and we've made a lot of really good connections over the years, and we've played a lot of, hundreds of really good shows.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish there was two of me so I could do both.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't do that. You can't have everything in life that you want.
Right.
It's really important to me to strengthen our connection to our home and continue to build on the life that we have here. That's really what's. That's what I meant for the long haul.
Right.
Music is, always going to be there, but as far as being in a band, on this level, it's just a temporary thing.
How is it being in a band like Wolves in the Throne Room and doing what you do and then experiencing, I guess, kind of the success that you guys have had? Because it seemed like, at least around here and from people that I've talked to throughout the nation or the world, that over the last few years you guys have really I hesitate to use the term blown up, but a lot of people have really caught on to what you're doing, and a lot of people that may not have heard you maybe when Two Hunters came out, maybe thereafter, have really started to pick up on it, and you're starting to have more of an active or larger fan base. What do you think about that?
I don't know. It doesn't really affect me one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm gratified that people respond to our music. I think if people oftentimes people say, oh, we just do this music for ourselves, and you know, we don't care if anyone listens to it. Well, that's not really true. You know?
Right.
If you're going to the trouble of recording a record and releasing on a record label, you're intending on people listening to it.
Yeah.
And of course, it's gratifying to have people respond in a positive way. And I do, you know, it's meaningful for me to talk with people and find out that, you know, we're on the same page, and that people can listen to our music and understand the ideas and the spirit that we're trying to get across.
Because mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, we feel as though we're just shouting into the darkness.
Right.
And that no one, you know, thinks the same way we do, or we feel completely isolated in our ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really a good feeling to encounter people, you know, all over the world who think exactly the same things and can decode from our music the spirit and the message that we're trying to put in there.
So more of people actually understanding what it is you're trying to get across, rather than people, you know, grabbing a CD, throwing it in their car, turning it up loud just to, you know, listen to loud metal music.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that's, you know, very frustrating about playing bigger shows. You know, there's always a percentage of the audience who just doesn't get it and doesn't really want to get it.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of, you know, the kind of crowd that's starting some sort of circle pit or something
mm-hmm.
in the middle of one of our concerts. And, you know, 90% of the people who are there don't want to do that. That's not what the music is to them.
Right.
You know, it's introspective music. It's music about journeying inwards, reaching a meditative space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about this sort of macho, this stage diving, aggression sort of bullshit.
Which goes back to a lot of the early Norwegian bands. A lot of them, anyway, you know, as they started up, were doing the same thing. You know, it was supposed to be introspective and somewhat isolationist. It wasn't supposed to become this huge thing that, you know, is now world-renowned and all sorts of people are into for the wrong or the right reasons, depending upon how you look at it. And they were, you know, as it started, you know, since the early 90s up till now, it's almost become, you know, black metal is just so watered down and so, it's just kind of polluted, I guess, with a lot of the bands that are around anymore and just doing it for, you know, because they want to go out and play loud metal music, or they want to listen to loud metal music rather than actually, you know, become introspective and get that kind of a feeling from the music that they're listening to or that they're playing. So it's kind of refreshing to hear bands that are actually, you know, kind of still have that ethos, so to speak.
Yeah, it's true. Like, you know, black metal, in a lot of ways, is the dominant metal aesthetic of our day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so if you're, like, kind of a meathead who wants to, you know, kick ass and have a good time and drink beers and maybe, you know, meet some girls or whatever, chances are you might start a black metal band.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, you know, ridiculous to me. And I can understand why some of the forebears of the genre are disgusted with the way things have gone with black metal.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons why I'm not really very interested in being connected to the genre. You know, sometimes I refer to Wolves in the Throne Room as a black metal band, but most of the time I won't.
Right.
Because I think that we have, in a lot of ways, transcended the genre. I think that we took a lot of things from black metal and were inspired by Scandinavian black metal,
mm-hmm.
but we've always been very clear that we're trying to take those ideas and transform them to our own ends and discard the rest.
Right.
You know, we've obviously got no interest in trying to replicate Mayhem Records or
mm-hmm.
or Mortal Records.
Wolves in the Throne Room will be playing at the Utah Arts Alliance on 2191 South 300 West with Eagle Twin and Ninth Zealot on October 1st. Spider is a local heavy metal rock band who recently released their first official EP called Castle Master. It's comprised of members Manchester, Holger, Grog, Crybar, and Surt. Here's a song from that EP called Eternal Conquest. Dust, lots of his mouth tonight. Listen to more of Spider's music at facebook.com/SPEITRE. Please Take Me Off the Guest List is an art book published by Evil Twin Publishing, featuring darkly humorous stories, some photos, essays, and memoirs, with contribution from Nick Zinner of the Yeah Yeah Yeahs on photos, Zachary Lopez of the Candy Darlings on texts, and design from Stacy Wakefield, owner of Evil Twin Publishing. This book explores the interesting and myriad world of rock and roll. This is the fourth collaboration from the trio and is published in October 2010. Here's Jeanette Moses speaking with Stacy Wakefield, designer of the collaborative book.
My first question is, how do the ideas for these book collaborations that you've been doing with Nick and Zachary come about?
They all sort of start in different ways. Our first book was really clear-cut, which was about 10 years ago. Zach had been writing a bunch of poetry, and he wanted to publish it, and he had the idea to, he was talking to his friend Nick, and they had the idea to put Nick's photographs together with the poems, so they specifically chose photographs that illustrated the poems. And then when they had that all together, they ended up coming to me, and I knew them just kind of vaguely from, we all lived in the same neighborhood and our bands played together, but I didn't know them very well. But they knew that I made books, so then they came to me and said, can you put this together? And I got excited about it, and we became, you know, better friends and continued to work on projects after that. So that book was really clearly, like, Zach had stuff he wanted to get out there to the world, and Nick and I sort of, you know, our roles in that book were much more supporting, but because we all really enjoyed working together and we were all happy with how that book came about. Our next book after that was about 3 or 4 years later, was Slept in Bed. So the first book I was just talking about was No Seats on the Party Car, which we published in 2001. And then a few years later, we were all like, that was really fun making a book, but let's make another book. At that point, I was looking at a bunch of photo series that Nick was working on, and one of them was this series where he took a picture of every bed that he slept in every night, which for him is more interesting than it would be for me because he's on tour so much and he sleeps in so many hotels. And at that time, that's when his band was starting to do a lot of stuff and going on tour a lot. So we were like, oh, this series is really cool. What can we do with it? And, you know, we ended up just talking amongst the three of us, like, you know, how could we present this series as a book? What'll we do? And so what we decided to do was Zach gave me a bunch of writing that he'd been doing, and I chose things that I thought went with the theme, and we edited things, and we called the book Slept in Beds, and it was very much an artist book, so we only made 1,000 copies of that, and it was like the photographs were printed on this shiny magazine paper, and then I had the stories silk screened on this fabric, like interfacing, which is very rough, and we put a piece of a sheet at the back of every book, and you know, it was very much like, for me, it was really satisfying, and I made them all by hand myself, because I have a background in like artist books, and I really, with that project, instead of having to think, okay, how can we make like a really cheap paperback that, you know, we can sell for $10 or something like that, I got to just have a lot of fun and make it very handmade, and my friend and I silk screened the covers in her kitchen, and you know, just every part of it was, they were all put together by hand. And then a little after that book came out, an editor at St. Martin's Press approached Nick about doing a book because he had a big photo show of his photos. So then our third book was this book that was basically, the whole point of the book was to be kind of like Nick's travel photos, like a little bit of a tour diary of him traveling with his band, but it had a lot of other things besides that. But I think that was the angle that was interesting to St. Martin's, because the editor we were working with did a lot of like music books. Mm-hmm. And so for them, this was, you know, kind of a music book, sort of like, you know, maybe in the feel of like a band biography or something, but in photos. Ever.
About how many printers did you have to approach until you were able to find someone who was willing to print such a uniquely designed book?
You know, I mean, I work professionally as a book designer, so I'm pretty used to having, you know, I have like a lot of different printers who I keep in mind for different kinds of projects, and most of the printers that I normally work with just said they couldn't do it, and then I found two printers who said that they were willing to do it. So probably for a number, I probably approached about 10 printers, and they all had different responses. So there were a couple that said they could do it, and we ended up going with the one that had the best price after that. So, but some of them just said, no, absolutely not. Yeah. Or they wanted to do it in ways that we didn't like.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that I was actually really surprised by when the book arrived, I was expecting it to be something big and heavy. And then it came and it was very small and kind of intimate. Were these intentional design decisions?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm personally very, very partial to pocket-sized paperbacks. I just feel like they're the most fun to read. I feel like when I get like a coffee table art book that there's always an essay or sometimes there's a lot of text, you know, about the artist that it could be really interesting, but it's just not comfortable to read. You actually have to like sit at a table and read it. And who reads like that? I mean, you read like lying in bed or lying on the couch or like on the subway. And so I just find smaller books much more comfortable to actually read and spend time with. And I feel like for a photo book too, you are just so much more likely to spend more time with it and really like, you know, pay attention to the photos, I think, than in some big special book that you like, you know, only get out on special occasions. So I really like that. And then also, you know, one of our goals with the project was for it to be pretty accessible in terms of both that kind of ease of reading, but also in terms of keeping the price affordable. So doing kind of the fancier design, the fancy design thing of having like the little books and stuff like raised the price. So we thought like, let's keep everything else simple and just be able to do a good job of this idea.
You can check out the cover story on Please Take Me Off the Guest List in our November 2010 issue online at slugmag.com. Time once more to sit down with Esther Moreno, resident office and editorial assistant. Is that correct?
I don't think I'm the office assistant. I'm the editorial assistant.
Fair enough. We'll do that one. We'll go with that one. She's also an expert on our daily calendar section, which you can find in the back of our magazine and at slugmag.com. And we've got another exciting week of events in Salt Lake City, as usual.
Yes, we do.
I heard that Bethany Fisher is going to be doing some sort of art show. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. Whole Foods at Trolley Square does an art show every month featuring a different local artist. And this month, Bethany Fisher, which is one of our Slug photographers, is going to be featured at the Whole Foods art show. She's a really awesome photographer. She specializes in urban photography, does a lot of photos of rap artists in urban landscapes.
And that's going to be on September 21st, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I believe it starts at 7 p.m. and it's catered. Whole Foods provides yummy food. Should be pretty awesome. Go support Bethany, because she's cool.
That's a ringing endorsement right there, because she's cool. She's actually a really well-known photographer with Patiri Photography, local organization. If you haven't heard of that before, then definitely check that out online. Thursday, September 22nd, there's going to be a snowboard movie, if I'm not mistaken. We're getting ready for the season. Everybody's gearing up. What's the name of that movie?
It's called The Art of Flight, and it's featuring Travis Rice, and it's really cool. You should definitely look up the trailer for it, because it looks like it's going to be really awesome.
I've never seen a movie at the Complex before, which is a local music venue usually, but it's going to be there in one of their rooms.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Probably on a big projector or something.
Mm-hmm. And the next day, Thursday, September 22nd, we'd like to wish a happy birthday to Adam Heath, a photographer here, and Courtney Blair, a reviews writer. And September 24th at Saltaire, the weekend is going to be kicked off right for all you people into electronic music. Who's going to be playing at that venue?
At the Saltaire, it's Skrillex, 12th Planet, Foreign Beggars, and Nodestrom. Skrillex is the frontman to From First to Last back in the day. Now he's into dubstep and he wears nerdy glasses while he does it. All the hipsters are super horny for it.
And on Monday, September 26th, a happy birthday to slug writer Alex Ortega. He's a copy editor and he features in our punk rock section quite often.
Yeah, happy birthday, Alex.
Good one, man. Thanks for joining us. Alex Ortega. And thank you for joining me again, Esther, for another awesome edition of the Daily Calendar. Can I say it was awesome? Do we have that good of a time?
My pleasure, JP.
Oh, fuck yeah. All right, check out more info on the Daily Calendar events in the back of our magazine and online. You can also download the iPhone app, which has our Daily Calendar, if you're interested in getting your smartphone super smart and underground. Local doom punk hardcore band Gunner recently released their debut demo EP, Catalog Your Faux Success. Featuring members Omar, Corey, Austin, Josh, and Derek, this is their song Quarry from that EP. Check out more music from Gunner at thisisgunner.com. Salty Streets Flea Market takes place at Kilby Court once a month during the summer and sometimes in the fall. It's an event that features, quote, pre-loved and unloved goods, tasty grub, and live music, end quote. Organizers Caramia Pureri and Audrey Gallegos recently sat down with Alex Ortega and talked with him about their event and what it means to their community.
Doing what we're supposed to do. I know we won't see it eye to eye.
What drove you to start directing Salty Streets Flea Market?
It started out of, I don't want to say boredom, but in a way of like needing an extracurricular activity to entertain us. And it kind of just grew into a very large extracurricular activity. I don't know, Audrey wasn't even living here when we initially started it.
I know, I was in San Francisco and I've been to all these flea markets. I was like, why is there not one in Salt Lake like this? Let's do it. I'm moving back, let's just start one up. And like, yeah. So we're really excited about it. It's fun, like me and Carmia were doing things, but we wanted to do some more things that were in our field, and so we decided to make our own.
That's pretty much how it happened.
Yeah.
And how long has it been enforced? Enforced.
We started in May. Our first flea market started in May
2010.
The initial idea happened like the second week of April 2010. And within about 3 weeks, somehow Audrey had moved home and we were doing our first flea market.
And was Kilby the original site?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I had been talking to Lance and Will about doing something. We tossed around different ideas, and then I was talking to Audrey about it on the phone, and we just, after like, I don't know how many times of talking about it, it just blossomed into a market, and then a flea market, and then okay, let's do it at Kilby, and then we called Lance.
Kilby has
and,
like the right aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's just so eclectic and fun and young and
a little more directed towards like outside underground indie type of scene, which I mean is exactly what Kilby is. And not only that, but we love Kilby as just a place in general, and I think a lot of the people that come to the flea market enjoy it for that reason as well, because it's, you know, we have people who have played in bands there or have come to shows there who bring their kids now and bring their kids to the flea market. And so it's like kind of turning into like a generational like hand-me-down place.
The new model of the American family.
Yeah, yeah, as Kilby Court.
As seen in Salt Lake City.
Yeah. If you, you know, it's, there's very few places that you can take your kids to see a show, and
it's all age and inspirational like that.
Yeah. We, you know, for example, Dave Payne has played multiple times with us and loves it because his kids get out there and like dance around, and he can bring them out in the middle of the day, and it's not like a dark, smoky club, or there's not, yeah, you can't bring your kids into it. So, yeah, you know, it gives them a chance to like just kind of share that,
yeah,
their talents with them in a different, you know, outside of the home or just in a different scene, you know, introducing them to that life, but in a different way, which is pretty awesome to be a part of that and to like to hear that that's what goes on, you know, with even like the vendors. One of our vendors' son's band played last year, like they were vending and then their sons were playing, and so it's pretty cool just to watch that stuff like unfold.
Even though it seems like it's pretty random from time to time or from event to event, what types of wares and goods can newcomers generally expect to see?
A lot of vintage. There's lots of handmade, you know, arts and crafts, which is something that we love and encourage because it kind of gets people to come out of their hole and like show off what they can do. But not only are they showing off their crafts, they're selling off their like books and their CDs or something, you know, so it's different, but mostly vintage, you know, handmade
records.
Yeah, records usually are there every time. T-shirts,
skateboards.
Yeah.
Okay, so hypothetical situation, I'm with Jeanette Moses, Slug's managing editor, and we're walking into the flea market. We're hungry. What's gonna happen? What do we do?
The hot dog king. This year we've had the hot dog king.
The hot dog king.
he's awesome. He's amazing. He's been super supportive. Last
year, we
can get
the Kilby dog.
Yeah,
it was the
Kilby court dog. There's always food there.
It's a priority for us to be able to feed the people that go there, and we also have Large's lemonade.
Yeah, is amazing.
Support fully and great people that run that.
Yeah. If you come at the right time, no one knows what time is the right time to come, but you can catch Rob Packer making tacos or cooking something up. Giving it away.
He made salmon burgers.
Yeah, salmon burgers. Those are good. But you never know when he's going to do it, so you just have to.
Yeah, we encourage people, if they want to bring their own food, to bring their own food and make this their market. So, but we definitely want to be able to provide them food as well.
There seem to be a lot of skaters rolling up at this event and loud half-pipe noises. What's that all about?
That was, the Kilby ramp. never-ending Kilby Ramp stories. We were talking about it one time,
weren't we? We were all like,
we wanted to do a portable ramp, like bring one in, just so people would have something to do, and like hang out and stick around. And after tossing around ideas, and it was still midway through the second week of April, and we're still like tossing around ideas with Lance, and he and I were talking about like skaters and how we could entertain people, more or less. One thing led to another, and next thing I know, Lance has, I guess they were not really called blueprint plans. I know nothing about skate ramps, but
I think Lance wanted a skate ramp for himself.
Secretly, he wanted a ramp for himself. Don't tell him that we think that, but I think that's the whole driving force behind the Kilby ramp.
That's why I'm so into it.
It turned into a project that actually was finished in about 2.5 weeks. He enlisted the help of big chunk of the skate community came down, and all he had to say was, let's build a ramp, and that's what happened.
That's all it took.
It was one of the most amazing things.
Watching that thing go up in two weeks' time, it still is a hit. I mean, I've been down there when bands from out of town show up and they're like, the hell, there's a ramp here? Like, they get so stoked, and it's like, that thing has become a staple in not only like the flea market. It's like we bring in, you know, obviously a lot of like the skate community with that, but it's nice to like get people in, and then it also gives people who aren't, like when the flea market's not going, it gives, you know, everybody, it's something that brings, it's another thing that we've added that brings people together. So it's kind of nice. It's, I know it's a lot of work, so Lance, I'm sorry about that, but it's nice to have.
What do you feel that the Salty Streets Flea Market brings to our community, that being Salt Lake City, the Valley, or otherwise?
I think it gives us that outlet for being, you know, whoever that person wants to be that day, or, you know, sell, and gives that creative outlet to, you know, have the freedom and show off the jewelry that they make and things like that, and without being in a judgmental environment. You know, this is something that's, like you said, it's been dubbed the Gypsy Mart, you know, something that's you know, we want, if we give that place just for, you know, maybe that creative outlet for everyone to come down, you know, and everybody feels a part of it, and that's what we want to give, a community event where anybody can feel like they can be a part of it.
Yeah,
and no judgment passed or nothing. It's just that this event is for everybody to be themselves and to celebrate, like, that we all have.
Collective individualism.
Yeah. As a whole, I think it just opens up to, you know, there's vendors from Provo, Taylorsville, Park City, like, all over the place, and they all end up in one place, and, you know, it's the same as most markets, but it's such a relaxed feeling once everything's going, and once you're just there, and it's just like, you know, it's the creative everything that's coming out of everybody, and I think just coming together and like being in that same space, and like, it's just a good place to be. It has a happy vibe, and
yeah, just celebrate, you know, just Salt Lake is such a great place, and I don't think I think a lot of people take it for granted how great the city is and how fortunate, like us, especially being young, you know, living here, and how many opportunities, and it's just places to celebrate that, you know, and celebrate like all the talent that comes from Salt Lake City and surrounding areas in Utah, and all, you know, it's just awesome. I love it.
And how does one go about getting a booth and or space to sell their wares and their other goods?
All you have to do is email us.
This is where you plug it, Carmia.
Yeah, thanks.
Insert plug here.
Insert very large advertisement here. It's just saltystreetproductions@gmail.com. It's all you have to do. It's $25 for vendor space every month. You can sign up randomly, or, you know, we have a few people that signed up and did the whole year, or if you want to sign up for just 1 month, it's super easy, so.
We handle, like, we don't have an interview process or anything like that. We're very personable with, like, the emails, and yeah. we keep it very...
We don't really have, like, a, there's not an application process, like, you pretty much can bring whatever you want as long as it's legal and doesn't harm anybody. That's pretty much like our only stipulations as far as selling stuff goes, but I think that's why we end up with
Or just not harming someone that's there at that moment.
Yeah.
Because we've had a guy sell knives before.
Oh yeah, we've had a
knife. And who knows where those knives had gone or like what crimes they've been into, but
yeah, we won't go there. We will not relate our name with any of this.
The next and final market of the season will feature Holy Water Buffalo on October 2nd at Kilby Court. Thanks for listening to Sound Waves from the Underground. For more information about the music, interviews, and guests from this episode, visit slugmag.com. If you have questions, comments, concerns, or an angry thought, you can send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and it's produced by Gavin Sheehan. Our show's theme and music was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design was by T. Doan, technical design by Kate O'Connor, and audio mastering from Andrew Glassett. Special thanks to Adam Sherlock and Eric Tomorrow for their help and support. You can download or stream us next week for our all music episode with the Slug staff. This is JP signing off. We'll catch you next time.